My job is to somehow make them curious enough or persuade them by hook or crook to get more aware of themselves and where they came from and what they are into and what is already there, just to bring it out. This is what compels me to compel them. And I will do it by whatever means necessary.
Welcome to the Black Girls Heal podcast, where we talk about healing our intimacy disorders, unresolved trauma, and building a healthy relationship with first ourselves and then others. Every episode, we will talk about advice you can apply today to break unhealthy patterns and grow in your self-worth. I'm Sheena Lachey, love addiction coach and trauma specialist. Let's begin. Hello, hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Black Girls Heal. I'm so happy to have you with me today. Today, we are talking about how to break the cycle of love addiction by looking at the roadmap to heal love addiction. So for those of you who do not know, I have a free download called the 5-Step Roadmap to Heal Love Addiction. But within that download, there I have the 5-Step Roadmap for Love Addiction, the 5 steps for how to break patterns of love avoidance, and also for love deprivation. So I'm going to have other episodes where I talk about those other intimacy disorders as well. But today we're going to focus on love addiction. So intimacy disorders are any persistent pattern that stops us from being able to have, receive, embody the love that we want. This is reflected not only in our relationship with other people, but our relationship with ourselves. And so depending on the intimacy disorder, whether or not it's love addiction, love avoidance, love deprivation, or a mixture of the three, we can sometimes be our biggest enemies in getting the types of relationships that we want. Maybe we will over-obsess about a relationship that's not good for us. Maybe we are the people who love very hard. And so sometimes that dedication is rewarded when we are in relationships with securely attached people who are loyal, who care for us. But when we are in relationships with people who are unavailable, who are neglectful, who will repeat the same type of trauma pattern that brought us into this lower sense of self in the first place, then we're kind of setting ourselves up for disaster. And so in today's episode, I'm going to focus more on love addiction and what it looks like to break those cycles. I'm going to say a little bit more about what that looks like. And then we're going to talk about the steps to get out of it. You can follow along if you already have that free download. You can find it at blackgirlsheal.org/roadmap. And for those of you who are hearing this for the first time, go ahead and join me here. And you can check out that roadmap because there's a lot more information on how to break the cycles than I can give here in today's episode. So let's go ahead and jump on in.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. Before we get started, let's take a small break to say thank you to this week's sponsors.
So we are in February now, which is Black History Month. And it's also, for those of us who are based in the States, it is the date, it is the month that we have Valentine's Day. Perfect time for us to recap the intimacy disorders to make sure that we are not repeating these same cycles in this next chapter of our life so that we are going in fully aware. And then also in case we are caught in these cycles that we can know how to break out of them. So again, I'm pulling from our free download, the 5-step roadmap to heal from love addiction, but it includes the other intimacy disorders as well. It's about 10 pages and it's filled with so much great information, not only the 5 steps that I'm going to share today, but also some of the common roadblocks that get in the way and some next steps that you can take. Okay, so let's start off with love addiction. So first is break down what love addiction is. Love addiction is the persistent obsession of a person, a fantasy, or relationship and mistaking it for love. Those who exhibit signs of love addiction usually have unmet emotional needs that they seek to fulfill with either romantic fantasy or relationships. Their compulsive behaviors are usually fueled by the fear of being abandoned and consistently adapt, change, and eliminate healthy boundaries to be available to an emotionally unavailable partner. So for those of us who can relate to love addiction, we are the ones who are typically very generous, very empathic, very giving. Even if we're not like that with everybody, with the people who are close to us that we really trust and want to build life with, these are the people that we will give the shirt off our back to be there for them. However, a problem for those of us who use love addiction and the romanticizing of it. And, you know, one day when I have my happily ever after, none of this will ever matter. And I will be better by being with this love in itself. We set ourselves up for a lot of disappointment because those of us who are coming from that place typically are looking for something or someone outside of ourselves to make us feel whole because we don't feel whole or good enough on our own. So that means we are more likely to attract other people who will match that type of intensity and energy. So we might match people who with their words will tell us, you know, you're great, you're wonderful, I love you, I want to be there for you. But with their actions over time, or maybe even at the beginning, is pretty neglectful. And for those of us who are struggling with low self-worth, that kind of mirrors what that might look like. Like we might tell ourselves with our words, and there might be actual parts of our life and of ourselves that we really do enjoy, that we are proud of, that we are, you know, that we feel like we are a treasure or a prize. But there are some other parts of ourselves that we might have a lot of self-doubt around. We may have a lot of self-rejection around. And so we may be either consciously or subconsciously looking for a relationship that's going to make all of those deep-seated insecurities and fears feel like nothing. We want to find someone who will see those things and be like, you know what? No matter what, I love you and you are worth being here with and you're worth changing for and you're worth whatever it is that your fantasy says. But because we may be coming from a lower sense of self-worth in those areas, we may not see when other people are treating us in less than we deserve because we kind of believe that we're not worth that much when it comes to those areas, right? So we end up having a very topsy-turvy, imbalanced relationship with love or with our idea of love and really sacrifice love, who we are, to be in relationships with people that often are not the best for us. So when we talk about, well, where are we going? If I'm going to give you some steps to get out of love addiction, and I'm calling it a roadmap, where are we going? We are going from being love addicted to becoming love balanced. Because there is nothing as far as how we show up, those of us who accumulate to symptoms of love addiction, where you fall in love with the idea of love, you start to abandon your own personal needs and desires to take care for other people, you stay in trauma-bonded relationships longer than you need to, in spite of the emotional, mental, spiritual, sexual, financial consequences that it may be having for you, you get fear at the idea of being alone or leaving certain relationships because of what that may mean. All those things. There are positive qualities, even in some of the negative presentation of some of that, right? So being generous of heart, being empathic, being compassionate, thinking about what your partner needs, being open to compromise, being a romantic, being someone who sees the bright side and seeing the best in people, being loyal, being someone who is there to put in the hard work for a relationship to the very end. These are all the qualities that we need to have in healthy partnerships. Again, it just gets skewed in how and where and how often we're giving it to certain types of folks. So we want to go from being love addicted to becoming more love balanced, where we're able to balance having a healthy sense of self, a healthy connection to who we are, practicing not only self-acceptance, but self-enjoyment, that you truly enjoy yourself. But that you also have space for other people. A lot of times I'll hear folks, especially if they're breaking the patterns of love avoidance, is they will say, yeah, I love being by myself. And that's great. And it's my favorite place to be. But it is in the absence of interpersonal relationships. It's still hard to balance. And I know this episode isn't about love avoidance, but because I know there's a lot of overlap, especially when it comes to this point, I wanted to share it. When we look at being love balanced, it's not that I am only safe and secure and feel whole when I'm in relationship just with me. I can bring that sense of self not only around other people, but that there's also a door that's open for me to receive love as well. I don't have to pick and choose between being self-contained and feeling safe in an area because I have to always have my guard up because who knows who may come at me a certain way or whether or not I can trust these people, right? I live in a safe and secure bubble, but the boundaries are still permeable. Things can get outside of my boundaries and things I can let things into my boundaries based on what I want to come in. And by me being someone who's love balanced, I choose relationships where I get to live in that ease all the time, where I don't have to second guess everything that's happening or try to interpret, you know, what does this text mean? Or do they actually care about me? Or is this relationship going to work out, right? I've chosen the right environment for me to practice this safety. So the process of healing from love addiction includes building all of those skill sets, the ability to determine who is unhealthy for you, learning how to let people in, changing your communication skills or expanding them, learning how to do intimacy in a deeper way, learning how to receive love and care and attention. Because chances are, if you primarily function as a love addict or in a lot of your romantic relationships, you tend to veer off towards love addiction. Chances are you're used to being in relationships where your needs are not prioritized, if considered at all. And so you may be very used to just becoming a fly on the wall or being able to merge your desires into what you think is best for the relationship and not really standing on your own. And unless you're very much in your love avoidance state. But even then, those of us who can be really love avoidant, it's still going to be the same task, learning how to not get triggered when someone's paying attention to us, when they're giving us things just because they want to give it to us without feeling like we owe them or we have to pay them back or we're too much or being too weak right now. You know, like an equal relationship looks more like you working for the love versus you being able to just take it in. Again, these are all things that we, skills that we'll pick up as a love addict healing to become more love balanced. But let's go ahead and go to the 5 steps that I've marked in our roadmap, because this is the path that I've just seen be the easiest for people to do as they are going through this healing process. So the first step, and I'm only going to get into the first 3 of the 5 steps for today's episode. But the first step is to identify all of the relationships that are available versus unavailable. Okay. Your first step in breaking the pattern of love addiction is identify relationships that are unavailable versus available. So you need to clarify which of your friends, lovers, and loved ones are toxic versus the ones that are healthy. Now, here's the reasons why this is important. One, it is very, very hard. It's a lot harder for you to change your trajectory, to change how you think about the world, to change all of your relationship patterns if you are around people who are normalizing what's going on with you, people who are normalizing the type of dysfunctional things that are happening, that they may make jokes about dysfunctional ways to communicate around playing games, minimizing their feelings and holding everything in and all that. Like, those are all things that might, in moments of stress, be really good to joke about, to see memes about, you know, to kind of laugh about just the chaos that life can be sometimes. But when you're trying to change it so that this is no longer your normal, you have to start to put yourself around people, places, and situations that mimic and mirror more of what you want, or at the very least, that they are not detrimental to your path, right? That you're not trying to change your walk and change how you see the world and increase your self-esteem, and you don't have people who are making fun of you about it along the way, or giving you worst case scenarios, or trying to drag you back to where you don't want to be. Now, knowing how and who are the lots of people in your life can be very hard, especially if this has been your normal for so long. That's why I wrote the book, How to Pick Partners for Love Addicts, because I know that many of us were using our best judgment to identify people, but we still keep getting the same types of frenemies. We still keep getting the same types of romantic relationships that go nowhere. We keep trusting the family members that just end up disappointing us in the end, right? And so in that book, How to Pick Partners for Love Addicts by Sheena Lachey, there are 40 quick, clear markers, 20 for people who are unavailable and 20 for people who are available, and how to assess all of them. And so you want to identify relationships that are good for you, because these are going to be your support system and your cheerleaders along the way. You need to clarify who is good and who is not good for you. Sometimes you are not going to know until you start the process. Sometimes you just have to start walking. You just have to say, okay, what I have going on right now is not working for me. I want to change my trajectory. I want to change how I feel about myself and how I show up in the world. And so I'm just going to start moving. And I think that these people are good for me, and I think that these people aren't. So I'm just going to start walking and see and see where it ends up. Do not put a lot of pressure on yourself to make the perfect decision for fear that what if I choose to not bring somebody with me and I can't fix it? Or what if I do bring this one person along, they end up dragging me down? We learn by doing. Those of us who are perfectionists, those of us who have learned how to survive in life by avoiding all of the worst case scenarios, this healing process is going to be one of the first times that you're just going to have to start walking out on faith. That as long as you're showing up for yourself, everything can and will be used for your good. There's no such thing as a mistake that is not a lesson that you can learn from and decide, okay, this is more of what I want. Let me continue to add this to my life. Or actually, when I did this and I was around these people, this is what I got and I don't want that. So now I have more wisdom and I know more about what works for me and what doesn't. You know, in either scenario, you are winning. Step two to break out of love addiction is probably what many of you thought step one would be, which is to detox from addictive relationships. This is where I encourage you to go into no contact with all relationships and situationships that you may have been using to self-medicate and fantasize. So these are the people that when you are around them, when you think about the relationship, when you think about the history of the relationship, that it could be emotionally triggering to you. These are the people where you may be in relationships with them where there is nothing truly eventful that has happened except for the fact that they have dragged you along without commitment, without being able to give you the security that you need in your partnership and in your relationship, that they may not be as emotionally forthright and expressive in spite of maybe some big milestones that you've done together, the amount of time you've been together, the things that they tell you. When it's quiet moments just between you and them that seem so sweet and deep and intimate, but then they do things that show that you are actually not a priority or someone that is kind of sidelined in their life. And it's hard for you to reconcile those things, right? And while this is happening, it's making you feel worse about yourself. It's making you someone who might have usually been really confident is making you start to feel a little bit insecure, right? It could be those relationships. It could be relationships that are very clearly narcissistic and draining to you and that require you to give more energy and time and access to yourself that you really don't have anymore, or you feel guilted about it, or you feel shamed about it, or you fear punishment that may happen if you do not show up and act accordingly with what the person wants. This could be a friendship. This could be a mother-daughter, parent-child, grandma, grandchild situation. This could be a romantic partnership, of course, as well, right? But any relationship where you kind of feel emotionally held hostage and maybe even physically held hostage based on what the other person needs. Otherwise, you will feel bad not only from them, but from you on the inside. Sometimes some of us can think that because we have discomfort with setting a boundary, that must be that there's something wrong. There is something that's called boundary hangovers. Some of us are so averse to using boundaries because we have been taught that us having boundaries is wrong. That the reason why we're here is to give an unending amount, like a limitless amount of time, of emotional care, of favors, of money, of sex, or whatever it may be to the people around us. That our purpose in this life is to give, right? And if we replenish, it's only we're replenishing ourselves in order to give to people again. And that is very dysfunctional, right? And the way that we get to that place is because we are usually praised for being so sacrificial and rejected or punished or criticized for any time that we have either tried to restrict it or not met the ridiculous standards that the other person was asking us for, right? And so us putting down boundaries and saying no and considering what it is that we want, just because we want to do so, right, feels sacrilegious. It feels wrong. It feels as if we are the most selfish person in the world, even if we have been giving nonstop to this person for months, for years, for decades, right? And we don't know because we weren't taught that it's always okay for you to say no. It's always okay for you to have boundaries.
Hey, we hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. Let's take a quick break to say thanks to this week's sponsors. All right, so I'm a few years late, but just in time for Valentine's Day, I finally tried Skims for the first time, and I really loved what I found. I tried the Fits Everybody collection by Skims, and it focuses on the best comfort intimates, and I found them so soft, stretchy, and like a second skin. I loved how they fit so well under my outfit seamlessly, and they also came in a variety of shades that I got to choose from that were so great for skin matching and also fitting the vibe of whatever I was wearing. The triangle bralette is definitely my favorite. It's the shape of the bras that I usually wear around the house, and I found that Skims to be super lightweight and supportive, which means a lot for someone like me who has a larger chest. The Fits Everybody collection is available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X, and you can shop now at skims.com and Skims stores. And after you place your order, be sure to let them know I sent you. You can select podcast in the survey and be sure to select my show in the drop-down menu that follows. And if you're looking for the perfect gift for your Valentine or for yourself, Skims just launched their best Valentine shop ever. Available in sizes for women, men, and kids.
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on myPlan and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
So, how is this all connected to breaking the cycle for love addiction? Step number two, where I say to detox from addictive relationships. Some of us, when we get into certain partnerships and relationships, we immediately regress to either a younger state or a state that is not our normal self. So we could be really great with having boundaries with coworkers or with friends, but maybe there's a romantic partnership that when we are around them, we just completely lose what is in our best interest. We will say yes to things that we don't want to say yes to. We will lie and say that we're okay when we're not really okay. We will smile and try to make it through. We will make threats that something should change, but really it doesn't change. When it doesn't change, we are still there. And so there are some relationships that we just kind of lose our sense of self-control around, again, in spite of what may be happening. So the best way for us to reset ourselves in relationships that we maybe trauma bonded with or lose our sense of self around is to do no contact. We do no contacts not because we are trying to punish them, because we're trying to teach them a lesson, because it's the ultimate show of our boundaries. We do no contact. I teach no contact as a healing tool in efforts to reset your nervous system. When I teach no contact to my students, I suggest no contact for 90 days. This might be someone that you intend to never talk to again based on the things that have happened. This could be someone that you really want to repair a relationship with, but just every time y'all come together is too toxic, it's too destructive, it's too whatever. Either way, and then of course, there's a whole spectrum of people and relationships in between those two extremes. Either way, no contact will help you because you'll be able to reset your nervous system that will start, that has learned to react reflexively, instinctually to triggers and traumas. It may be hard for you to hear what this person's actually saying and see the actions that they're actually doing through a clear and coherent lens versus what you want it to be or what you're afraid it may be. You might be coming off in this relationship being very triggered and feeling as if it's hard for you to feel settled in this relationship. You could be in a relationship with someone who's really healthy and amazing, but you find that you keep projecting things onto him, her, or them that are things that are not real. And so you need some space and time for you to focus on yourself and work on you. Now, my disclaimer is usually what I tell people who are in relationships with people who are healthy and available for them. I am not going to tell you to go into no contact because it's actually reinforcing your desire to run. It's easier for us to run from intimacy and say, okay, I'll just get it on the next round. The reason this didn't work out is because of this person. They didn't communicate in the exact same right way I want them to. Their personality was a certain way. Or we already had this disagreement and I really don't want to have a relationship where we have any type of history of conflict at all. So I'm going to keep bouncing from relationship to find the one where there's no conflict at all, where we always 100% understand each other and get each other's jokes and is happily ever after, which is a trauma response. For those of us who've had to learn how to build over controlled environments to feel safe, it is very, very hard for us to deal in normal intimacy relationships because it requires us to let go. It requires us to trust. It requires us to be able to be in the moment so that if or when there is a boundary breach that's happening in the moment, trusting that we can respond to it, but also not living in that hypervigilant state because we miss out on a lot of the love and laughter and softness that's happening when we feel like we always have to look over our shoulders. Going back to step number two, we're detoxing from addictive relationships to allow ourselves a chance to step into this higher version of ourselves, to get clarity around, okay, am I seeing what is actually true in this relationship or what I want to see? Can I build a life that's also not so dependent on this other person? Because one of the things that happens with love addicts and romantic partnerships, this whole falling in love with the idea of love and needing love to feel complete, is you need more and more access to this person. You need more time with them. You need more compliments and words of affirmation from them. You need more gifts, but it gets to the place where it's never enough to where you feel safe in the relationship. So at first, it may feel like it's starting off as like a cutesy, do you love me? Do you not love me? Or, you know, just bid for normal words of affirmation or love language things. But what you find over time is that you're starting to feel more and more insecure in your relationship. Even though this is a partner that is fully faithful, they may compliment you all the time, they may be fully attentive to you, you feel insecure because that insecurity started way before them. And you're hoping that if your person acts the exact right way, says the exact right things, shows up in the exact right way, it will heal this internal sense of dread, of a fear of being left and abandoned, that is something that you had to fix on your own. So this is the type of thing that has either pushed away people in the past or made you keep hanging on to someone way past the time that they should have been there. That's for you to heal during this no contact period of time. Okay. During no contact, I think also can be very intimidating to people, because if you have been at the relationship, you need to cut off as someone who has been a best friend to you, someone who's been a close confidant, someone who knows everything about you, going into even a 90-day period without your person is terrifying. Because then what do you do for companionship? What do you do for just regular love and laughing and telling jokes and living life, right? Well, during your no-contact process, you should be building relationships with other people. Because part of the problem that happens with love addictions is you make a person, you idolize the person, you idolize the relationship, and you make it your everything. When there are cracks, or even when there's no cracks, you can try to invent them because you're holding on so tightly. So this is your opportunity to build relationships with people outside of that main partnership, because it's going to teach you a couple things. One, it's going to teach you that love comes in all forms and all directions. It can show you that it is possible that you can have other relationships that are just as fulfilling, just as loving, just as joyful as the one that you have with this person, especially if this is a toxic person that you need to let go of and you're holding on because you're afraid of being alone. Getting out and making other relationships is really going to help bring this connection back down to earth a little bit for you so you can make the best decision for yourself moving forward. And if this is a relationship that you decide you want to reconcile with, what does this look like? What is the conversation I'm going to have with them if I am going to have a conversation with them? What are the standards? If this is a person that I know won't listen, but is someone who I feel like I need to be in connection with, how am I going to govern myself accordingly? How am I going to focus on my boundaries within me versus trying to impose things onto other people? This is a scenario I hear all the time, especially when it comes to parents. I'll have students who will go through the no contact process with parents in their lives, but these are people that they do not want to completely distance themselves from forever and ever. So when it comes time for them to reintegrate, they need to have a conversation with themselves about, okay, What does boundaries with this person look like? How do I know when I am feeling disrespected? How do I know when I'm feeling unsafe? And what am I going to do to protect myself? I've already had a conversation with them. I'm going to continue to do so. But at this point, now that I'm thinking more clearly, when I'm triggered, I'm not going to go back to this person to have another 3-hour fight with them. Like maybe that was part of the toxic cycle that you needed to detach yourself from, because every time you were disrespected or harmed by your toxic mother, sibling, brother, father, whoever, you would go and have a conversation with them, but only for you to be emotionally depleted and drained at the end of it. They didn't hear anything that you said. They may abuse your emotions against you. And what was supposed to be an empowering moment only felt like more trauma. And so now you're out of that cycle, right? You did the no contact process to figure things out, to figure out what felt good and what felt safe for you. But these are relationships that you still want to have contact with. So how am I going to protect myself knowing that this is who these people are? This is how they show up, right? And hopefully along the way, in these first couple of steps, you have enlisted the support of other people to help you determine this. As many of us have already done our own self-love detoxes, we have determined, we have graded all of our relationships, found the ones that we felt like were good, found the ones that we felt like we were lacking. We spent some time on our own to go and focus on what healthy love and everything looked like. But right when we were ready to start to move closer to people, we only found the same type of relationships all over again. And that's because sometimes you don't know what you don't know. You can't see past the perspective and the skill set that you've been given. And so that's why reaching out to therapists helps. That's why I created this whole platform, this whole program to help people break these cycles of love addiction, to give you the skills and the tools to change your life and for that to continue to grow throughout your life. And not only love addiction and love avoidance and love deprivation, but the trauma that causes it, to take all these skills into improving your self-worth and all of your relationships that you're connected to now and forever. That's exactly why I do this in the Love Addiction Recovery School, because I really love that way of helping people even past what I did when I was in the therapy room with folks. These two stages are stages that you need to be building your tribe and your support network to help you identify the right relationships and go through the no contact process, because it is very painful. There are different traumas that will come up, which leads into step number 3. Step number 3 in healing love addiction is to clear out your toxic roots. By toxic roots, this means to identify and clear unresolved childhood wounds that have led to unhealthy attachment styles. So we hear people talk about father wounds and mother wounds and things like that because they are very real. They absolutely do help create a template for how we see the world, about our relationship with the world, our place in the world, and what do intimate connections look like. If they're available to us, do they stay? Are they ones that we can trust? What is our role within the relationship? Are we there just to be someone who takes care of other people? Are our relationships only just for our own pleasure and what we can get from it? Is it about survival of the fittest when it comes to intimate relationships? Or is it about deep friendship and community? You know, we learn all kinds of things from what was given to us. As we grow up, we have the opportunity to say, okay, these things that I've felt to be true my whole life, do I still want them to be true? Do I want to seek other relationships where this is not the norm? And if I want to seek other relationships where this is not the norm, or I think differently about myself, then what does that look like to start those habits now? And are there any things that have happened in my past that get in the way? I think this is an area that, even though many of us can talk about childhood trauma a lot, especially because we talk about it more in pop culture and in social media and in podcasts, there's more language around being trauma-informed, which I think is wonderful. But talking about the trauma and having recognition that it exists is not the same as healing it. It's not the same as confronting it, looking at where and how it hit us, hurt us, affected us, and learning how to have different conversations with those hurt parts of myself so that they can actually move on. Some of us have stuck inner children, inner teenagers, inner parts of ourselves because we're talking to that part of ourselves like an adult, like we're telling the 4-year-old version of ourselves that didn't get enough hugs and care to say, well, you know what? Bad things happen. And you know, this shouldn't have happened to you, but we're going to pick it up. We're going to keep going. We're going to move on. Imagine saying something like that to a four-year-old that's crying in front of you, right? But that's how many of us talk to ourselves. We don't really know how to have that sensitivity with ourselves. And even if we do, we don't even know what to say. And we don't really have the belief that it would even work, right? So again, this goes back to us saying in steps one and two to make sure that we have people to assist us in this transformational process. This is a process that I do in the Love Addiction Recovery School, as well as talk to y'all about it here and teach you about it here, because it is a hard process. It's a deep process and learning about yourself in a different way. And probably in the most important way you ever will, though, because the relationship that you have with yourself is what helps you have your best relationships everywhere else, if that's something that you even want to focus on right now. And it gives you, as a love addict, the gift of choice. Instead of feeling this compelling need to be in partnerships and relationships, otherwise you feel really unsafe and scared, then it gives you the ability to be with yourself and to be in relationships with other people without feeling that obsession around it. So like I said, you can get the other two steps of breaking out of the patterns of love addiction by getting the free roadmap at blackgirlsheal.org/roadmap. And it'll give you all of those steps along with some of the most common roadblocks that get in the way for each of those as well. So I hope that you find that helpful. For those of you who are ready to start working on these things, you can join me in the Love Addiction Recovery School. I've just started bringing back our cohort. So for every person that joins, you will be a part of a 6-month cohort at the time that I'm joined, at the time I'm announcing this, right? So make sure that you join when you hear these offers so that you can start the process with what's available. But I'm restarting 6-month cohorts for us to work together within the program to help you break these cycles of love addiction, love avoidance, love deprivation, and the trauma that causes it, to increase your relationship or improve your relationship with yourself and your self-worth, right? In order to get the love and relationships that you want. So you can learn more by going to therecoveryschool.com, and I look forward to seeing you all there. All right. That's it for now. As always, take care of yourselves, and I'll see you in the next one.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. Before we get started, let's take a small break to say thank you to this week's sponsors.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And future stronger you can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And free fitness training to help you mix up your routine. Plus, most clubs are open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends February 28th. See Home Club for details.